It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, if you're in the Wausau area tonight, you'll have the chance to hear from a longtime civil rights activist and one of the freedom riders of the early 1960s. She joins us with her story and what she hopes people today can learn from the civil rights movement. First, the fascination with who we are and where we come from has been part of humanity for a long time. There might be at least one person in your family actively researching your family tree, or someone who's given a try. Maybe that person is you. With the rise in popularity of genetic testing kits, genealogy has become a buzzword lately, but you don't have to test your DNA to piece together the puzzle of your past. There are many methods of research, and a lot of them are free, like talking with members of your family, digging through old photos, or looking at census records. Mary Dally Munsmeyer joins us now from our Milwaukee studio. She has over a decade of experience in genealogy research, family history narrative writing, and photo and document restoration. She's the founder of Cerebral Genealogy and a member of the National Genealogical Society. Mary, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we're going to spend a lot of time on the how of genealogy, but talk a little bit about why. Why do we get so hooked on our family trees?
Well, that's a pretty broad topic. But for most people, it's to make a connection with their family in a long distance form, so back in time. Some people feel disconnected from their extended family, especially in our more mobile society where we don't really kind of gather in one geographic space anymore. So genealogy research can really bring you back into history and make it clearer how your ancestors lived and why they migrated or immigrated or just in general how they lived their lives, which gives us a personal connection to our ancestors.
I know part of your focus is kind of coming up with narratives and the story. So it's not just about collecting the names and dates on our family tree, but really trying to figure out the stories of the people who came before us, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I personally like to do narratives because it helps people tie together the historical context of when their ancestors lived, which can be drawn absolutely from the documentation. But in order to make sense of it, historical context is necessary. So understanding that maybe your ancestors came over during a period of war or after a war, and so they're economic refugees or political refugees, or they're just looking for more opportunity in another country. So understanding historical context helps to frame the story of your ancestors and give it more oomph, basically, but also a clearer path into the past.
Do you see all these DNA testing things, the genetic testing things, getting more people in the door, getting more people interested in genealogy?
I think it does. DNA is just one tool in the larger toolkit for genealogy research. And as you said at the beginning of this segment, it is absolutely not necessary to do DNA testing. A lot of people feel like they have to do it. That's just simply not true because the foundation of genealogy research is really the documentation. You want to follow the paper trail. And DNA in and of itself doesn't give you the answers to why, which is the the biggest reason that people want to study their family genealogy.
We're talking to Mary Dally Munsmeyer. She's a genealogist. She's the founder of Cerebral Genealogy. She's based in Milwaukee. We're going to get some advice now on how to do it, how to get started. And Mary, for somebody out there who's thinking, yeah, this sounds fun, I'd like to check this out, I have no clue where to begin, where would you steer them?
Okay, so you absolutely do want to start with what you have and what you already know. In a lot of cases, that means starting with yourself. And you can do that by thinking, you know, gathering all the documents of your own life and kind of tracking as you go through time. It's good practice to do that. So when you're studying other people, you have a better idea of what kind of information you're looking for to fill in the blanks of their lives. So then you just want to go the next level up. For most of us, that means our parents. If we're lucky enough to have our grandparents still alive, they can be, you know, an invaluable source of information. Many people start genealogy a little bit later in their lives. Although I have noticed more of an interest by younger people, and by younger, I mean in their 30s or 40s. So some of those people might be lucky enough to have their grandparents alive. But you do want to start with what you already have and what you already know. And be aware that we don't always know exactly all the details of even our parents' lives. We don't usually sit around and talk about what happened when you were in fifth grade, or where did you go to high school, and that kind of a thing.
Now, I've got a dad and an uncle who've done a lot of genealogy in our family, and they're very organized, and they end up with just reams and reams of information.
Sure.
I, myself, if I were to do this, I'm super disorganized. What would you say to someone getting started? What kind of systems can they put in place to make sure that they don't just get overwhelmed with this mass of material?
Right. So organization is key to this kind of research, and really for any kind of research. So where you want to start, I like to start with a family index. And this means that you're creating a document that is focused on one family. And the main information that you're putting in is for the father and the mother, or whoever the parents happen to be. And then who their children are, who their parents are, who their siblings are, and then connect those documents together. But move backwards in an orderly fashion. In terms of, this kind of talk can get a little wonky, but in terms of making folders and separating out the information, that's really important. The other thing that, in terms of organization, is to source your documents, source where you got it, the repository you got it from, what kind of a document it is, and extract all the information that you can out of it.
I want to bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Marcus is on the line in Milwaukee. Marcus, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. So I was also wondering this a couple of years ago, what a good starting point would be. And I sat down with a handheld tape recorder and the oldest living members of my family and a family tree that was in a family Bible. And so they explained to me about my great-grandfather who had passed away before I was born. And I now have an audio recording of their memories. And my grandma, unfortunately, she now has Alzheimer's, and so her memory has become quite spotty. But I've been able to go back with those tapes and go to my dad and my aunt, who's a sister, and, you know, kind of flesh out some of these stories. And since I have tapes, we can always go back and revisit it. And I found it a great way to start just from the immediate family tree.
And Marcus, did you feel like just the fact of doing this, sitting down with the tape, brought you closer to your older family members you talked to?
Yeah, it was a fantastic bonding experience, and, you know, heard some funny stories that, you know, now I wouldn't even be able to hear. Not necessarily that I'll tell my kids at this point. They're going to have to wait until they're at least 18. But, you know, interesting family lore and you know, nothing sinister, just, you know, drunken incidents and camping and so on and so forth.
Marcus, thank you so much for sharing that. Mary's sitting down and not just chatting and taking notes, but maybe even making a recording with relatives.
Absolutely. I really recommend that you record it, as long as everybody knows that you're doing that and it doesn't make people too uncomfortable. Once you start getting in the flow of conversation, people should forget that they're being recorded, especially with smartphones right now. The audio recording quality is very good. And oftentimes people don't notice that you're recording after a while. And they start to loosen up and tell you, you know, maybe some scandalous stories like Marcus's family did. And those are great stories for flavor, definitely.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Mary Dally Munzmeyer, member of the Association of Professional Genealogists and the National Genealogical Society. She's the founder of Cerebral Genealogy and is based in Milwaukee. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you talked to family members about your family history? Did you learn something that surprised you? Have you dug into your genealogy collecting documents? Have you run into some dead ends along the way? Call in with your experiences or questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about genealogy with Mary Dally Munzmeyer. She's joining us from our Milwaukee studio. She's an expert in genealogical research, family history narrative writing, and photo and document restoration. She's the founder of Cerebral Genealogy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. 1234. Tell us about your experiences trying to track your own family tree or call in with your questions for our guest. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go back to your calls now. Alice is with us in Madison. Alice, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been trying to follow my paternal side of the family several times, and I've always run into many obstacles and would like to know where I could begin. And this is because I never met my paternal grandfather. He was divorced from my paternal grandmother when my father was very young. And in fact, my father actually changed his name because of it. So I don't know his actual birth name. And to add to that, there was a misspelling of the last name somewhere down the line, and I don't know when. So it's been really hard to even pick up the beginning threads on my father's side. And I just wonder if you have any suggestions.
Alice, thanks a lot for the call. So a particular question there, but a pretty common experience, right, Mary, where there's a name change or different spellings of a name over time.
Yeah, that actually is pretty common, especially in cases of divorce where, the children actually either adopt their mother's name, the maiden name of their mother, or change it entirely. The one thing that I would ask of the caller is, does she have the original birth certificate? Her father's original birth certificate should have his birth father's name on it. It depends on whether, you know, when he was born, what kind of access she could get. But she really needs to, that would be the first document that I would suggest that would give her the best clues to start her journey on her paternal ancestry. That would be the best document to get. So she needs to, if she knows where her father was born, she needs to contact the Register of Deeds of that county, or she can contact, if he was born in Wisconsin, the state health department would have that record. She would have to prove her descendancy if it was under a certain time period. But if she has her own birth record, that could go through. But that would be the first document I would ask her to find.
Do you need to know? Good luck, Alice, with that. Do you need to know a birth year or a birth date to be able to track that down?
They do. They do. It just makes it faster and easier for them to find it. If she does not know her father's birth date, that's going to make it a little bit more difficult. She might be able to find him in an index and give them, I think he was born on this date. This is not a free service. You're going to have to pay for it. And since I've started, which was back in 2004, the costs for that have gone up. But at the same time, that's an invaluable document that can start you on your way.
Alice, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We heard from Chuck on Facebook who writes, a great deal of interesting information can be found in online newspaper archives, especially of small-town newspapers. One of the things I pay attention to is information on health. For example, a story on the 90th birthday party of one of my ancestors mentioned that she was still running up and down stairs and had a great memory. Yeah, that I've seen some of those old newspaper articles, and they do sometimes have a flair for those little details.
Absolutely. Small newspapers, really had a florid way of writing. And especially, the further you go back in time, the more kind of lurid details they may give you. If you can find things online, like newspapers.com has that, you can connect through that free through BadgerLink. So if you go to the public library, you can use your card to get into BadgerLink and look at that for free, as well as Ancestry.com. They've added more newspaper items. But sometimes the older, smaller towns, you have to go to the library itself in the town that it's in. But you can access a lot of things online.
I want to throw a couple challenges at you that different groups of people might have. African Americans in the United States sometimes hit a wall, especially if they get back to days of slavery. What are some of the resources out there that might be available to help overcome some of those obstacles?
Yeah, African Americans, back to a certain point, do have difficulty zeroing in on the individuals in their ancestry. Of course, in the 1870 census, that's when you start to see African Americans who are then free, by that time freed, if they were slaves, they begin to be named in the 1870 census. And prior to that, they may not even be in the census, but rather listed, sadly, as property with no names. So the what often happened with slaves is that their slaveholder gave them their last name. So what you want to do, in the census at least, is to try to make a connection between the 1870 census, this is getting very specific, and previous censuses, and then try to make a connection there. That is, it's a difficult process. It might be something that you want to hire a professional to do just because it's very time-consuming. But it's very rewarding if you can find that information.
Talking to Mary Daly Munzmeyer about genealogy. She's the founder of Cerebral Genealogy based in Milwaukee. You can join in with your questions about tracking your own family tree or maybe your experiences. 800-642-1234 is the number, 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mary, one thing that's come up on my Polish side of my family is after you go back a couple generations, you're looking back at the old country, and a lot of times that country, those borders may change from year to year. It might be Poland at one point, Austria-Hungary, Russia, Prussia, whatever. What happens? What are some advice when people start to look at look outside the United States for genealogical research?
Right. So in the past couple of years, Ancestry and FamilySearch.org, which FamilySearch is a free online service, they have added a lot more church records. For Europe, in particular for Germany. And you and I have something in common there. My paternal grandparents came from West Prussia, which is now a part of Poland. That can be a little bit tricky when you're talking about border changes, country border changes. But in terms of, in the example of Germany, they have those records. They did manage to save those records, and those are now held in Berlin. Many of those church records can be, as I said, found on Ancestry or FamilySearch, but it's not the entire amount of records. So that can be tricky. You're also looking at foreign language challenges, which you don't have to know exactly how, you know, be fluent in reading a particular language. You do have to know how to recognize people's names and have some idea of how they're related in the document.
Let's go to another caller now. Jen is with us in Washburn. Jen, hello.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Jen?
So I had a question. I've been doing some genealogy study. I've been tracking my matrilineal line, my mother's mother's line, and I've followed it back to around 1800 when my mother's family moved from, I believe, Pennsylvania to Ontario, Canada. And I was just wondering if at that time there was any sort of documentation when people moved from the U.S. to Canada or vice versa.
Jen, thanks a lot for the call. Mary, crossing back and forth over the Canadian border, how can we track that?
Well, that's an interesting point. There was no hard border until, and the exact year is not coming to me at the moment, but there was no hard border for many, many decades between Canada and the United States. So you can look at shipping passenger manifests or cruise ship manifests who sometimes took on passengers that traveled between Canada and the United States. You're not going to find immigration or naturalization until you reach the 1800s, at least the 1800s. I believe it's after 1860. So going beyond that, in terms of finding migration information, it may be difficult. But you do want to look at ships, at trains, train travel, although trains weren't really a thing then, before the 1800s. So ships would be your best bet.
Jen, thanks for the call. We'll go to Linda now in Milton. Linda, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about?
I was wondering if you knew anything about GEDmatch. Is
it
a reliable source to use, or is it, it's GEDmatch.com?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, GEDmatch is actually, it's a very useful service for DNA. And you can download, say, if you took a DNA test through Ancestry or 23andMe, you can transfer that data into GEDmatch. And they do have a very large database. And so they're bringing in data from their own, from Ancestry, from, like I said, 23andMe, and from other DNA sources. It is reliable. It is secure. So it's something worth looking into.
Thanks a lot for the call, Linda. Time, I think, for another caller. Paul is with us in Menominee. Paul, hi.
Hi there. It's amazing what you can come up with. One of my relatives spent a lot of time and found that my family, my mother's side of the family, came over in 1630, but they were also related in part of the English noblemen who had conquered England in 1066. And they were friends with William the Conqueror. And so it's amazing what people can dig out if they study it.
Paul, thanks. Some of my non-Polish ancestors might have worked for your relative. They were some of the peasant dudes, as far as we can tell. That's the kind of story we might come across, Mary. Briefly, as we wrap up, this could be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so doing genealogy research yourself is very fulfilling. It is a lot of fun. It does take a lot of patience and a lot of perseverance, kind of opening your mind up to where you could find documentation and what kind of historical context your ancestors lived in. So I recommend it to everybody. But if you hit a wall, you should try and contact a professional who specializes in what you're looking for.
Mary, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you so much.
That's Mary Dally Munzmeyer. She's the founder of Cerebral Genealogy and a member of the National Genealogical Society. She joined us with some advice on how and why we can do some genealogical detective work. Coming up after the news, we'll talk with a civil rights activist, one of the famous freedom riders of the 1960s, who's speaking in Wausau tonight. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.